General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
In the year 1652, the first musket shots resounded over Table Mountain. The slaughter had begun. And within the next 300 years, literally millions of animals were shot. For food, for gain, for sport. The primeval instinct that makes man a hunter dies hard. But it was, I think, Ernest Hemingway who invented the mystique of modern hunting. The moment of truth. The desire of man to prove himself. The short, happy life of Francis Macomber. I myself distrust this mystique. I could take you up to a herd of elephants and show you how to shoot 15 in as many minutes. Amateur hunters find that there are few places left in which to indulge their hobby, for safari firms are buying up concessions in virgin territory like the Okavango swamps. But one place where it is still possible to hunt on a modest scale is the controlled hunting area at Sabi in Rhodesia. This is the setting for my story tonight. At Sabi, for a few pounds, you can take out a license to kill. ...250 miles from Salisbury, you turn off the main road at Makuti and plunge into a wild garden of bush and aloes, a jumble of hills and mountains and tree-fringed granite domes. After the turmoil of the Victoria Falls, the Zambezi, dotted with sandy islands and banks of reeds, flows peacefully through the lush tropical vegetation of the valley. The heat descends like a blanket as we drive through the valley. The car windows close to keep out the hordes of tsetse flies. The Sabi hunting area lies between two game reserves, Mana Pools and Chiwari. And here, during the season from May to September, some 200 hunters come each year to buy their licenses and shoot game. The Rhodesian Parks Department decided that if the game must be culled, it might as well be done at a profit. Every hunter must first take out a general license for £20, which enables him to shoot zebra and kudu, impala and springbok and warthog. To kill a buffalo costs him another £7, while sable antelope and eland cost £15 each. It's more expensive to shoot a lion or a leopard, £25 apiece. And a bull elephant costs £35. But if an animal becomes scarce, the price goes up. And this year, you would have to pay £250 for the pleasure of shooting a rhino. At Merengora reception camp, we were welcomed by a ranger who gave us our licenses.
Well, that's all the formalities completed, gentlemen.
What about licenses? Let's see. You've got your general game licenses, plus two elephant, lion, two buffalo.
Yes, thank you.
You sure you wouldn't like anything else?
Well,
the eland? No? Or leopard, perhaps? Well, I mean, you can always come back to the office and take out an extra license if you feel like it. Let's take a look at the map of Sabi.
Yes, please, yes.
This is where you find your sable. They come across from here, Mana Pools, and up here's the best place for elephant. Well, the last lion seen in this area on Camp G was just here, near the river. But I warn you that the game is widely dispersed this year. Now, what about your trackers? Tau is available for the first week, and...
Widely dispersed, indeed. We didn't see a living creature as we drove another 90 tsetse-ridden dusty miles to our camp at Sabi. There are 8 camps strung along the banks of the Zambezi, each with a couple of tents, a primitive shower, a large lean-to that serves as a dining room and living room, rows and rows of barbed wire on which to hang the biltong, and wooden trestles for the skins and trophies. On the far side of the river, the Zambian escarpment rises majestically, and the sun was poised for a moment on the highest peak as we drove into the camp. We enjoyed a sundowner, unpacked, cooked a meal, talked briefly about our chances on the morrow, and retired early to bed. We started out just before dawn, wrapped in sweaters to protect us from the bitterly cold wind. Dr. Lowe and Dr. Peterser, Ntau the tracker, Timothy Bungay, and Dieter Plager from Springbok Radio. Birds flew up out of our path as we drove along looking for the spoor. We had licenses for buffalo, lion, and elephant. And according to Mtau, bull elephants were scarce this year. As we drove along, we saw herds of impala and eland and sable looking at us disdainfully, knowing full well that we could not shoot them as long as they stayed in the reserve. We stopped many times to examine spoor, but sometimes they were a day or two old. At others, the spoor led into the reserve, not the hunting area. The sun was high overhead before we saw the place where the bush was trampled down by a herd of buffalo. And this time, moving into the Sabe. Yes, the spoor was fresh. Ntau estimated that some 30 buffalo had passed this way a few hours ago. We slung on our water bottles, shoved oranges in our pockets, loaded the rifles, and set out to stalk the buffalo in the thick jesse bush. We walked for 12 miles before Mtau motioned us to stand still. The jesse had cleared, and there on the open grassy plain stood the herd of buffalo. Quick count. Mtau had been right. There were nearly 30 of them. But there was no way to approach them, no cover. We waited in the heat of the afternoon sun, plagued by tsetse flies, but not daring to slap them too hard. We were in luck. The buffalo were moving slowly in our direction. Moving slowly forward on our bellies, we inched our way up to a slight rise and waited.
It's calling us. The boy's calling us. I think he's seen them. Duck down. Let's move slowly over to his side. Now, down, duck. I can see one. I can see he's there moving. That's all I can see.
Just like very sure of your shot, because very thick stuff follow wounded buffalo up.
He's standing, he's looking our way now. He's looking, I'll have to change to a solid. It's going to be a frontal shot, just hang on a bit. I hope he doesn't hear this. He's still looking our way. He's looking straight at me.
The rest of the herd scattered, wheeling away across the plain. Doc Lowe had hit the buffalo, but it had disappeared in the thick jesse, leaving a trail of blood. In single file, every sense alert, we followed. There's nothing more dangerous than a wounded buffalo, for it gives no warning. It'll lie up somewhere, anywhere in the bush. Wait for the moment to charge. We lost the spoor. Found it again. Doubled back in our tracks. Then found the trail of blood once more. The bush grew thicker. Sudden movement. It was only a startled water bug. And then...
It is quite safe now. There's the first shot. Good shot on the shoulder. Very good shot. It's a wonder he got so far with that shot. Very good shot. Beautiful pair of horns. Some of the best I've seen. Beautiful pair of horns. I see about 45, 46 inches. Anyhow, it was a dangerous bit of business.
That's nothing to tingle, nothing to bury the cubs, nothing to bury the nickies. But it's not bony in a rap. But in a mushy money spirit.
After the horns were removed, we decided to use the carcass for bait. Earlier that day, we had seen lion spoor on the track by the river. We drove down there and trailed the bait on the back of the truck so that the lion would be able to pick up the scent. We tied the carcass to a tree, covering it with grass so as not to attract the attention of the vultures. It was a perfect spot. Some 30 yards away, a large tree had fallen across the path. This meant that, as long as we were downwind, we could approach the lion without being seen. Then we retired to our camp. And after dinner, we talked about the reasons why a man hunts.
Well, some animal has to be killed so that you may live. Put it that way. Whether it's a sheep, a goat, or whatever it is.
And he will treat, though. Every man is trying to do something to himself.
Yeah, and another thing, that another point. Like I said to you the other day, why do you climb a mountain? I mean, it's quite an effort to get up there, and it's dangerous, and you've got to be an expert. But once you get to the top, and you look over and you look down where you've come up, you've conquered something. Now, a true hunter doesn't shoot everything that he sees. He's looking for the big one. He's looking for the excitement. I mean, after all, that is hunting. You don't disturb animals that you don't want. You don't shoot and let lie.
Why should I shoot? It's the basic instinct of man.
You shoot an animal, and the only time I let an animal lie is when I use it for bait. Now, an elephant, I must admit, and I'm not very fond of elephant shooting, because if you shoot an elephant, whether you shoot a 100-pounder or whether you shoot a tuskless animal, it's still the same danger, and it's just the same shot. I mean, I will only shoot an elephant for big tusks, but not just to pull the trigger. I mean, that's not hunting. You see an animal, you pull a trigger, that's not hunting.
Hunting generally is a challenge. A hunter, a clean hunter, challenges his skill, you know, and compares it with the senses the animal has got. Nature has given the animal senses that human being haven't got.
No, I've got.
Well, they have given us fast guns, accurate sights, and
that's all a human being has got. He's got a powerful rifle and his brains.
Yes.
That's all he's got.
But otherwise, he's a very, very poor match.
He's a very poor match.
For a game, you can say what you like.
How many animals get killed by lion leopards every night? I mean, in this Zambezi Valley, there must be hundreds. So you are not eradicating a game, especially if you go hunting, you do controlled hunting. Mm. And once hunting is controlled, and you can control yourself, I don't think it's just a terrible thing.
And so to bed. Again we rose before dawn and drove back to the place where we'd left the bait. It was just getting light as we crept along the path. But it was not a lion that was taking the bait. It was a leopard. The temptation was great, but no one had a license to shoot a leopard. Reluctantly, we crept back to the truck. By midday, we'd seen nothing fresh, and so we drove to the dry riverbed on the boundary between Sabi and Chiwari, and set out on foot to see what we could find. Suddenly, Matau stopped. In the distance, we could see vultures hovering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Majitina bona inapuzire. Rota ya minapuzire, inapumile labu inaamba manji.
He says that these marks here, these are drag marks, most probably by lying, dragging what they've killed or what they're eating. And these vultures haven't had anything to eat yet, they're just sitting around looking on. These poor are definitely are very, they are very, very fresh. Lion's been here not longer than half an hour. And this pig lying here is just about eaten, and I think we must have frightened the lions away.
Yes, the lion had been feeding not long ago. We probably disturbed them. We moved slowly towards the bank. A sudden movement in the bush. How many were there? We could see the spoor of two, or was it three, round the carcass. We crept up the bank. The bush was so thick that we couldn't see anything until another slight movement some 20 yards away. Growling stopped. And we moved forward into the bush.
Well, I got my lion.
It was a full-grown lion. But Mtau told us that there had been a lioness and three half-grown cubs as well, but they disappeared. We drove the truck along the riverbed and loaded the lion on the back. It had been a long day, and the sun was setting when we finally reached the camp, to be greeted with the news that Mtau had seen the spoor of a herd of elephants moving towards the hunting area from Manapu's reserve. After breakfast, we set out. Trail led into the depths of the Jesse bush, where the visibility was roughly 15 yards. Mtau led the party and soon singled out the bulls. It was no easy matter. The ground was dry and hard, the tracks confused. Sometimes he'd walk round in circles following the bull's prints. At others, he'd examine a broken branch or an elephant tropic. We were getting nearer.
Well, we seem to have lost it at the moment. The boy's trying to find it. This is still the last definite spoor here, but from here on it's been quite indistinct. He's got it.
We'd gone 13 miles by now. Suddenly, Mtau found droppings that were only minutes old. The herd of elephant must be near at hand. Taro took out his little bag of flour and shook it gently. Yes, the wind was right. And we moved stealthily forward. The jesse was so thick that visibility was reduced to 10 yards. Then we saw a colossal grey back arched above the bush. Then another. And yet another. We looked round and saw that we were surrounded by elephants. Somehow we slipped in between the herd, and now there were great lumbering shapes on all sides. We lay low, hardly daring to breathe. Matthias was shaking his little bag from time to time. Slowly, laboriously, the elephant ambled from tree to tree. The sun was high overhead and they were drowsy. But one false move, and we'd be trampled underfoot. We lay there for over an hour until the circle broke and we had an escape route. But then we saw, some 20 yards to our left, an enormous anthill. We crawled towards it. It took us nearly 50 minutes to reach the anthill. It was covered in thorn trees. We stationed ourselves underneath these, while Dr. Peterson crawled up to the top to survey the scene. The elephant had now moved a little way away on the far side of the anthill, too far to shoot with any accuracy in a thick jesse bush that would easily deflect any bullet. Only a brain or a spinal shot will stop an animal. And you need stopping power in terrain like this. So we waited. And waited. The heat was stifling. The tsetse flies bit any exposed flesh and even penetrated clothing. The mopani bees clustered round our faces and crawled into our ears. And carefully, we shifted our position from time to time and waited. Then we saw the glint of Dr. Peters's rifle as he raised it slowly. One bull elephant had ambled over towards the anthill, unconcernedly eating acacia pods. The moment had come. The rest of the herd charged round and round the base of the anthill, while we charged round and round the top. Then they lumbered off into the undergrowth. Breathless, torn by the thorn trees, sweating profusely, they clambered down the anthill. The elephant looked as though he was sleeping. He had pitched forward on his forequarters, his massive legs tucked under him. The shot had penetrated the brain, and he died instantly. We'd finally got our elephant. The hunting trip was nearly over. And back at the camp, we sat gazing at the changing colours of the Zambezi as the sun set behind the Zambian escarpment. The final, leisurely sundowner. For tomorrow, we were to drive back to civilization. And while we sat there, I thought about the instinct that makes a man want to kill. The true hunter enjoys the chase, and in a curious way respects the animal that he's trying to kill. And perhaps it's a good thing to get away from the artificialities of modern civilization. Get back to the simple life where where you're pitting your skill and your strength against wild animals. If men didn't have wars, the world would soon be overpopulated, and mankind would not have enough to eat. The balance of nature must be kept. And it's true to say that if the game was not kept down, if the elephant were allowed to multiply unchecked, there'd not be a single tree standing, and precious little else growing, in this area of the Zambezi Valley.
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.